20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Happy Thursday, Packers fans. Welcome into another new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. You can find us 365 days a year talking all things Green Bay Packers. Always appreciate your support while doing that. It is a labor of love, and it is something that myself and I know the entire team enjoys bringing to you every single day. So make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews. We always appreciate that a ton. In just a moment, we're going to be going over all the news and notes that took place on Wednesday, and then we're going to talk about the 2021 NFL Draft and basically the epic failure that it was for the Green Bay Packers. We will get to all of that. Before we get there, shout out to Logan Hoffman and Kelby Goodman for becoming brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members. Appreciate that a ton, you guys. Make sure you tell your friends about it, and if you have not signed up for the YouTube memberships yet, again, make sure to do so. But Logan, Kelby, appreciate you guys a ton for that. All right, let's get to the news and notes portion. AJ Dillon is a Philadelphia Eagle. Of course, the thigh memes with Saquon Barkley and AJ Dillon immediately exploded across the internet. Good, good opportunity for AJ Dillon. And like we talked about yesterday, you know, bummer that his career ended on an injury in Green Bay. Thankfully, his career did not end. That's the huge part. And he does get the opportunity to continue to play. He goes to Philadelphia. Yeah, I think probably a solid pickup there. We'll see if he can win the backup job behind Saquon Barkley. I know Kenneth Gainwell just signed elsewhere, so there should be some opportunity there. My guess is Philly might address that position in the draft as well, but it's a good opportunity. And, you know, if you're looking at a tush push, I mean, man, get those thunder thighs of AJ Dillon and Saquon Barkley pushing behind Jalen Hurts in that situation. It might even be more potent with those two behind him. So, but overall, good for AJ and a great opportunity for him. We'll see what he accomplishes and, you know, in Philly and what, you know, if he can make the 53-man roster there and things like that. But his days in Green Bay, at least for now, are officially over. And we talked about it yesterday. It made sense. There was no real opportunity in Green Bay. It was time for him to move on. It was time for Green Bay to move on. And like I said, we'll see what he can do in Philly. The other one, maybe a little bit more surprising, not that he's gone. Josh Myers is now a member of the New York Jets. That's not massively surprising. What is a little surprising is that he only got a one-year, $3.5 million deal. That is a minuscule deal, especially in this market. I mean, MVS got signed on Wednesday, and he went for more money. Like, it is a really, really, really low number for a four-year starter in this league. Now, I know center is not always the most valued position. I know myself and kind of a lot of people thought maybe that John Runyon Jr. number where JRJ got 3 years, $30 million a year ago would be maybe in that range. I didn't know, you know, more recently, I thought maybe it would be like 3 years, $21, $7 million per year range. And we even talked about, hey, if you could maybe get him back on like a 1 year five, 1 year six, maybe that changes the calculus a little bit. I did not see 1 year, $3.5 million coming from Josh Myers. And for those of you who are aware, or if you're new here, thanks for being here. I have been what I will call not a hater, but a Josh Myers realist when it comes to what he's done on tape and my grades and things like that. To the point where when the Green Bay Packers went out of their way to say like Josh Myers is playing the best football in his career and like we have a lot of faith in Josh and like so on and so forth, like I felt like I was going crazy at times. Like, I'm like, this is a true story. There was a point, not in 2024, in 2023, where I had poor grades for Josh Myers, and we don't need to go over it. He was one of my lowest graded players on offense in every year but his rookie season. And I was in the middle of 2023, and he once again had low grades. And there was this talk out of Green Bay of like how there was the famous quote, he's playing the best football of his career. And I'm like, usually when you hear things from the coaching staff of like players that are playing well, it does, this is not to my own horn, it usually does really match up with my grades. So when I heard that like they're going on about Josh Myers, it wasn't just one person. I think it was Stenovich, it was LaFleur, Goody talked about him. it finally got to the point where I'm like, all right, clearly I'm just wrong here. I'll take the L on this one. I go back and I rewatch all the Josh Myers tape. I rewatch all of the 2020, we're midway through the season. I take extra time out to go and like, because honestly, quite frankly, I just wanted to learn. I was like, all right, what did I miss here? Where did I go wrong? And I watched it again and I came to the same exact conclusion. I'm like, no, he's not playing the best football of his career. He's not doing anything remotely special. And 2024 comes along. I actually thought there was a small portion beginning of the season, probably first 5-6 weeks, where I actually thought he was playing some pretty good football. Not great, not epic, nothing out of the ordinary in any sort of significant way, but I actually thought he was playing pretty decent football. And I thought maybe contract year or non-contract, whatever, maybe that was the incentive there. I thought maybe we're actually seeing the real Josh Myers now. And then from about week 7 on, and I think there was an injury that coincided with that, but just same old Josh Myers, and he really struggled. And again, I think there was another comment of playing some really good football, and I thought I was going out of my mind, but the grades for me have shown this, that he has not been a very good center. I understand the checks at the line and the audibles and the chemistry with Jordan and those things are very important. Not important enough, apparently, for the Packers or any other team in the league to give him more than a one-year, $3.5 million deal. You can say as much as you want, best football, he's playing great, whatever you want to say. When it's time to put a contract in front of a player and you know, kind of put your money where your mouth is, Green Bay basically said, 1 year, $3.5 million, we're good. We're going to go in a different direction. In fact, aggressively so, signing Aaron Banks to a $77 million deal. And I know that comes with Jenkins moving to center and so on and so forth. But yeah, this to me was a very interesting situation. Again, even me, who has been very harsh on him from a grading standpoint, going back to that for a second, thought he would get at least $7 million on a one-year deal. Just because of his starting ability, what we've heard from the Packers, his ability to communicate on the front of the line. You know, he had that injury at the end of last year, which I thought would maybe be a major issue, but by all indications, he's completely clear from that injury, or at least it's not a non-issue moving forward. But 1 year, 3.5, that's it. And then that harkens the question, if you were Green Bay, if you were Goody, would you take Josh Myers back at 1 year, $3.5 million? Or Aaron Banks at 4 years, $77 million. I'm going to be honest, as kind of the number one guy on like the Josh Myers, like it's time to move on bandwagon, 1 year, 3.5 kind of seems better than 477 for Aaron Banks, if I'm being totally honest. I still want to finish up. I haven't finished up my total tape study on Banks yet, and maybe I'll change my mind. There's zero question, by the way, that Banks is the better player. Banks is the better player than Josh Myers. No question about it. I don't know that he's, you know, I know it's a 4 year deal, but I don't know that he's 73 million better, 73 and a half million better than Josh Myers. That's a little bit more interesting. I hope he is. I'm definitely going to be cheering for it, but that's a very interesting juxtaposition. 1 year, 3.5 for Myers, or 4 year, 77 for Aaron Banks. I'll say this. If I were starting a franchise, or, you know, just take Green Bay out of the equation in a vacuum, and I could either start with Aaron Banks at 4 year, 77, or Josh Myers at 1 year, 3.5. I can tell you I'm definitely starting with Josh Myers at 1 year, 3.5. But long story short, hopefully Aaron Banks can outperform that and even play outperform the contract. He's a better player, and Green Bay decides to go in a different direction and no real appetite for Josh Myers. They have Tippmann at center right now in New York. I'm not sure what's going to happen there. Maybe Myers moves to guard. Maybe Tippmann moves to guard. He does go and play with Justin Fields at quarterback, his, you know, center to quarterback exchange at Ohio State. Garrett Wilson, the wide receiver, Ohio State. They got rid of the jet pack, right? So the all the Packers that were Jets, although Myers clearly hits that as well. But they're now just going to collect Ohio State players, apparently, in New York. We'll see if it can work out. But yeah, very, very interesting contract for Josh Myers. One other small piece of news. John Fitzpatrick, he was a restricted free agent tight end. He actually moved ahead of Ben Sims in the pecking order this past year. Fitzpatrick was not tendered a restricted free agent contract by Green Bay. That was always expected to be the case. In fact, now that probably clears him up to sign a vet minimum sort of deal with the Packers, maybe a small signing bonus. That would be my guess as to what would happen. In fact, it wouldn't stun me if Green Bay's next transaction was signing John Fitzpatrick to a, you know, 1-3 year, very small deal with very minimal signing bonus, if any. I could easily see that happening, but not tendering him probably opens that up in the very near future. All right, a couple other things. We got Aaron Banks's contract numbers. As you know, I look to look at it of what they will pay him depending on how many years he plays in Green Bay. There are four options. He can play 1 year in Green Bay. He can play 2 years, 3 years, or 4 years. And yes, there could be an extension down the line, but then that changes the contract inherently anyway. But if the contract stays as is, this is the potential contract. If he plays 1 year in Green Bay, he will cost a total of $29.2 million against the salary cap in this year and next year. So you might look at it and say, only counts $9 million against the cap this year. That's great. But if you were to cut him next year, you've $20 million in dead cap, $20 million plus in dead cap hits next year. So it's $29.2 million total that you would pay him against the salary cap for just 1 year of play. If he plays 2 years in Green Bay, it'll be $47.4 million that goes against the cap, or $23.7 million per season. If he plays 3 years in Green Bay, $62.9 million or $21.0 million, just $21 million, I guess is an easier way to say it, $21 million per season. And then last but not least, if he plays 4 years in Green Bay, $77 million is the full contract, $19.3 million per year. No matter what way you spin this, this is basically a 20 or more million per year contract for Aaron Banks. And in all likelihood, he probably doesn't see 4 years. So you're likely paying him either 23.7 mil per year if he plays 2 years, or 21 mil per year if he plays 3 years. A massive, massive, massive contract. No two ways around it. I know that there was this thought and this inkling of like, I bet this is kind of a fake contract and it's kind of like a 1 year. And it could be a 1 year, but you just paid him basically $30 million for that 1 year against the cap this year and next year, if that's what you're doing. And that is bad business. And I think some of this talk of like, well, Green Bay does these contracts where they can get out of them after year two, and it's really smart of them to do it that way. There's a truth to that. There is. But you have to remember, if he only plays 2 years here, you signed it. Then what you ultimately signed him to was a 2 year, $47.4 million deal. And if you got rid of him after 2 years, what does that probably mean? It probably means that he did not live up to that contract. So you just signed a guard that did not live up to a contract to get him to the third year of that contract. You released him early and you paid him $47.4 million against the cap for 2 years of play, $23.7 million per season. So congratulations, you can get out of the contract after 2 years. There is some positivity to that, but you just gave a massive contract to a guard that couldn't even make it to his third year on the contract, which is not ideal. So celebrate that all you want, but it's not exactly something worth celebrating. Last but not least, Cooper Kupp, Green Bay was rumored to have interest in him. I don't know. You don't know. There's these reports that seem to go around. Some people saying the Packers are interested in Devontae Adams and DK Metcalf, reporting afterwards that the Packers were never interested in Devontae Adams and DK Metcalf. I give up. I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine. This is why, like, I have nothing against any of the people who report for Green Bay. I think they're all fantastic. I think they all do a wonderful job. This is why for me, like, I don't even want to get into that sort of sources and anonymous sources and things like that. It's just not my thing. And I'll let them do it. But there's always this, like, you know, you could even, clearly somebody's right here. Like, somebody has sources that are telling them they either did or didn't talk to these players. And one side of them is right. The other one of them is wrong. I don't know which one it is, nor do I really care. At the end of the day, Metcalf and Adams are not Green Bay Packers. That's all that matters. And as far as whether or not Green Bay is actually interested in Cooper Kupp, like I said, your guess is as good as mine. I went back and I went down the rabbit hole. I kind of started, like, before watching the tape today, I started talking myself into Cooper Kupp again. And I'm like, maybe this could make some sense. Like, he's kind of a Packers type, 6'2", 200 plus pounds. Like, he's had a really great career. I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, maybe this could be. Go back and I watch the tape again, and it's just, it's not great. You can tell there's been a decline there. He's not the same guy. Yes, the routes are precise. You know exactly where he's going to be on any given play. He needs to primarily be in the slot. A lot of manufactured touches for him this past year, where he doesn't have the run after the catch ability that he used to. His efficiency is way, way down. His health has been down. His games played and snaps played have been way down. And, you know, yards after catch, all of it. All of it's way down. If you were to ask me if I would rather have Dontavian Wicks, Jaden Reed, or, you know, Cooper Kupp at this stage of their career playing the slot, I would easily take Reed or Wicks over Cooper Kupp at this point. I think there's much higher upside and just a little bit more juice, and specifically Jaden Reed. It's not even a question. So I'm not taking Jaden Reed out of that spot to give it to Cooper Kupp. Now, can you be creative and do some things with Kupp and like they did with Kupp and Nacua and things like that this past year? Yeah, for sure. It's not the worst case scenario in the world. If Green Bay had two outside wide receivers, like they had like a DK Metcalf and a Christian Watson on the outside, and you didn't have a slot guy and you can pick Cooper Kupp up for cheap, I'd be like, yeah, that makes some sense. With what Green Bay has on the roster already, I just don't see it making a ton of sense. Is it workable if they sign him? If tomorrow we're talking about Cooper Kupp signing in Green Bay, that they actually did it, as long as it's not for an exorbitant contract, there are ways to make that work. And I think, again, him being a semi-reliable target over the middle and some of those option routes is great. The issue is that the routes were precise. The separation was not there. He just didn't gain the separation anymore. And you can look at his highlights, and there's a handful here and there. I would say some of them are just bad coverage. There are others where he runs a couple of good routes to just get separation, but it is the exception to the rule at this point. So sign me not up for the Cooper Kupp sweepstakes. I would rather have him probably go somewhere else. But if they do sign him, it's not the worst thing in the world. They can find ways to utilize him within this offense. But I don't think it's the best use of resources if I were the Green Bay Packers. All right, let's talk about that 2021 NFL draft. Of course, the reason that we're talking about the 2021 NFL draft is because there is one player now left officially from the 2021 draft that is still a member of the Green Bay Packers, and that is Isaiah McDuffie. At best, their number three linebacker. That's all that's left. Eric Stokes is now, by the way, my apologies. I said yesterday, Falcons. For some reason, both black jerseys, I transpose those two from time to time. He's not a member of the Atlanta Falcons. He will not be playing with Kevin King, who's also free agent still, but he is a Raider. So my apologies on that from yesterday. Raider, not Falcon. But Eric Stokes is a Raider. Josh Myers is now a Jet. Amari Rodgers out of the league. Royce Newman was a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. I'm assuming he's a free agent right now. TJ Slayton is a Cincinnati Bengal. Marjon Charles has not played as of late. Cole Van Lannen, I believe, is still in Jacksonville. I think they just re-signed him. Isaiah McDuffie is a Green Bay Packer, and Kylan Hill is out of the league. Now I have to double check Cole Van Lannen, make sure I don't get that one as well. Still in Jacksonville. All right. So that was their draft class. Stokes, Myers, Rodgers, Newman, Slayton, Tremarjon Charles, Cole Van Lannen, Isaiah McDuffie, and Kylan Hill. Only one player left. Their needs going into that season, or into that draft, I should say, were interior defensive linemen. They had Kenny Clark, but their next best two were Tyler Lancaster and Dean Lowry. So they could have used some interior defensive line. They could have used a corner. They had Jair Alexander. Kevin King had his struggles by that point. Josh Jackson wasn't really coming along. They had Chandon Sullivan, but they definitely could have used a corner, which they got in Eric Stokes. They could have used a slot wide receiver, which they got in Amari Rodgers. They had Davante Adams, Alan Lazard, MVS, Equanimeous St. Brown, but a true legitimate slot receiver was something they definitely could have used. And then interior offensive line, John Runyon Jr., Elton Jenkins, and Lucas Patrick. Patrick was towards the end in his time in Green Bay, I should say, was nothing special at that point. Jenkins was good. John Runyon Jr. was up and coming, but I think there was always some question of the upside there as well. So those were some of the needs going into that draft. I picked 29, as we talked about. They selected Eric Stokes. Was a 9.37 relative athletic score. Really good athlete. Just before Stokes, a couple players that maybe Green Bay would have had interest in. Greg Newsome, the corner that went to the Browns, and Rashad Bateman, the wide receiver that went to the Ravens, went right before Green Bay, a couple picks before. The next five picks that were available for Green Bay, Greg Russo, the really, really good Buffalo Bills edge defender, he went one pick after. He just got a brand new contract from Buffalo. Odafe Owe hasn't really lived up to expectations with the Ravens. Joe Tryon just signed a one-year, pretty minimal deal. I forget where it was, but he did not exactly turn out in Tampa. Tyson Campbell, the corner for the Jaguars. And then Elijah Moore, the wide receiver for the Jets, who's been a couple different places since then. Those were the next five picks. Russo, Owe, Tryon, Campbell, and Elijah Moore. Some notable selections that went relatively close after. Javon Holland, the safety that just signed with the Giants from Miami, went 36th overall. Landon Dickerson, the guard center who went to the Eagles, went 37th overall. And then, I guess somewhat noteworthy at least, Aaron Banks, Packers' new guard, went 48th overall. The next five corners that went after Eric Stokes were Tyson Campbell, Kelvin Joseph, who was a absolute bust. Asante Samuel Jr., who's still a free agent, by the way, had an okay time with the Chargers, but didn't really break out in any sort of significant way. Aaron Robinson, who was a bust, and Benjamin St. Jude, who I think just signed a one-year pretty small contract with someone and did not really work out in Washington. So there weren't a ton of great options at corner there. Greg Rousseau, like I said, very next pick was great. He's an edge defender. Green Bay at that time had just drafted Rashawn Gary, and they still had Zadarius, who was coming off that unbelievable 2020 season, and Preston Smith, who was coming off the unbelievable 2020 season, right? So they really had no need for an edge defender. So, we can say in hindsight, like, yeah, just take Greg Rousseau. You can understand why they didn't want to do it. Owe was an edge defender. Tryon was an edge defender. Elijah Moore would have been that slot receiver. He wasn't exactly their type, although neither was Amari. And taking him in the first round was probably never really going to be in the cards, and it wouldn't have worked out anyway. Javon Holland, they did not really need a safety. They still had Amos, who they just signed. They just drafted Darnell Savage the year before, so that probably wasn't going to be something. And yeah, we found out later Holland could play in the slot, but there was thoughts of that going into the draft, so they could have considered that. But I think probably being primarily a safety, they didn't probably consider it all that much. Landon Dickerson, I don't think they were going to take an interior offensive lineman that early. So what you probably come down to here is Eric Stokes and Tyson Campbell, both from Georgia. And Stokes was the better athlete, 9.37 relative athletic score. Tyson Campbell was a 7.54. Tyson Campbell's had the better career after. Of course, they didn't know that at the time. I think you can make an argument here, if I'm being honest, that Stokes, at least based on their criteria, what they needed going into that draft, them loving premier athletes, that Stokes was the more logical choice based, again, on what they usually look for in the draft. And we're going to talk about why that piece of it matters. I should state this to begin with. We could all go through here and just say, go in every round and say, oh, who is the best player available? Oh, let's take Greg Rousseau in the first round, and we could do that in every single round. You can do that with every team in every draft, and you're going to end up with this superstar lineup, right? I'm not looking to do that for this reason. I'm looking to use Green Bay's criteria of what we know that they love in draft picks and then narrow it down to, these were the players they were probably deciding between. Did they get the scouting right or did they get the scouting wrong? In this one, I think you could narrow it, quite frankly, with what they needed and some of the athleticism that they like and the type of players that they like at each position. I think you could probably narrow this one down a little bit to Tyson Campbell and Eric Stokes. However you want to view it, they got that one wrong. Campbell's had the better career, not to an extraordinary level, right? He got a massive new contract in Jacksonville. He's been a good, solid starting corner. He's not an all pro. He's not a Pro Bowler or things like that. He's a good average-ish, slightly probably above average starting corner. Has had a better career than Stokes. They were both from Georgia, both had high upside. Stokes was a slightly better athlete, but Campbell was a very good athlete as well. In hindsight, they should have gone Campbell. All right, we can see that now. I will give them the benefit of the doubt here and say, based off of needs, based off of their criteria, athleticism, them liking the high-end athlete, I can at least see the vision as to why they went with Eric Stokes. You can make an argument for Tyson Campbell, but if you want to leave Stokes in this one, okay. If you want to go slightly in the other direction, probably Tyson Campbell. If you want pie in the sky and just say, screw it, I just want best player available, you're probably looking at Greg Rousseau, Javon Holland, Landon Dickerson, one of those guys. But I'm going to say here that Stokes is a very reasonable decision based on what they usually look for. And if that didn't work out, then, Tyson Campbell would have been probably the better of the two to go with in hindsight. Pick 62, Josh Myers. We don't need to spend a ton of time on this one. You already know the answer to this one. The next five picks, the very next pick was Creed Humphrey, the all-pro center for the Kansas City Chiefs. Kyle Trask, the quarterback for the Bucs. Andre Sisko, the safety for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Kellen Mond, the quarterback for the Vikings, and Davis Mills, the quarterback for the Texans. Worth noting here that Trask has basically been a bust. Kellen Mond was a bust. Davis Mills, basically a bust. Andre Sisko just signed a one-year, $10 million deal. He's been okay, but never really lived up to expectations. Just note that, Green Bay is not the only, team that can miss on players, right? Like Elijah Moore for the Jets in the first round, Joe Tryon for the Bucks in the first round. Like, those are also players that did not work out for their teams. These things happen. It's going to happen in every pick that we talk about. You could go and actually probably find a worse draft than Green Bay by taking players that were selected right around them, but there were some better options out there. In this case, Creed Humphrey was the very obvious one. The next five offensive linemen that were taken after Myers, Creed Humphrey, Jalen Mayfield, Brady Christensen, Wyatt Davis, and Kendrick Green. I will note one more time, Creed Humphrey, clearly the best option there. Josh Myers, better than Mayfield, Christensen, Davis, or Kendrick Green. Very clearly better. He was like the second best player that was available on the offensive line after Creed Humphrey. Some other noteworthy players that were also available at that time. Remember, Myers at pick 62. Aleem McNeil went at pick 72. Milton Williams went at pick 73. Osa Odighizuwa at pick 75. Paulson Adebo at pick 76. And Malcolm Kuntz, the edge rusher, at pick 79. Aleem McNeil, Milton Williams, Osa Odighizuwa would have been great fits along that defensive line. We talked about needing a corner. Maybe if they didn't go Stokes in round one, they could have gone Paulson Adebo here. But the clear and obvious answer here is Creed Humphrey. And here's the thing. It's not just hindsight, right? Number one, Creed Humphrey was expected to be a first-round pick going into that draft. And Josh Myers was more late second, early to mid third-round pick. And you had Humphrey on the board and Green Bay decided to go with Myers. And here's where I'm going to say, like, I'm going to use Green Bay's own criteria. Creed Humphrey was a 10.0 relative athletic score at center. He was the premier athlete at that position at a, you know, where we know that Green Bay at pretty much every position loves the premier athletes. If they just take the high upside premium player and ultimate athlete, Creed Humphrey is the no-brainer. He came from a big time school, supreme athlete, position of need. Like, it seemed like it should have been a no-brainer and was the better player than Myers in college. So it's like, it was, you had Humphrey outperforming Myers in college and Humphrey quite arguably bigger upside. It's really difficult outside of Myers being a little bit bigger to go with Myers over Humphrey, but Green Bay did. It was a massive mistake and Humphrey was right there for them. And just using Green Bay's own criteria, you could easily get to Creed Humphrey of who they probably should have picked. They just outthought it, tried to outscout it, and they got the wrong guy. Simple as that. So final answer there, Creed Humphrey. Let's go to the third round. This is another interesting one. Amari Rodgers. They moved up to pick 85. They traded picks 92 and 135 to get up to 185. The next five picks, Wyatt Davis, bust for the Vikings. Kendrick Green, bust for the Steelers. Trey Sermon, bust for the 49ers. Nico Collins, you may have heard of him, wide receiver for the Texans. And then Patrick Jones, okay career so far in Minnesota. He just signed a new contract, not with Minnesota. I'd have to look again who he signed with, but just signed a new contract recently. The next five wide receivers that were taken, Nico Collins for the Texans. Anthony Schwartz did not turn out at all. Des Fitzpatrick did not turn out at all. Amon-Ra St. Brown for the Lions. And then Jalen Darden, who also did not work out. The thing here is they could have stayed at pick 92, not moved up, and still gotten Amon-Ra St. Brown, who was taken at, I think, around like pick 102, somewhere around there. If they traded up, they could have taken Nico Collins instead of Amari Rodgers. Here's another one of the crazy things. Amari Rodgers was a 5.35 RAS guy. 5.35. Amon-Ra St. Brown, 7.13. Nico Collins, 9.57. If you wanted to make the argument of Green Bay needed a slot wide receiver, well, then they took the wrong one and they should have stayed put and stuck with Amon or gone with Amon-Ra St. Brown. All right. That's number one. Number two, if they wanted just the best wide receiver, maybe a little bit more of an outside guy, somebody also with high end relative athletic score, high end upside, well, then they should have gone with Nico Collins. It's another one where they actually took the outlier. They took Amari Rodgers with the 5.35 RAS. After the draft, Goody said that they almost took Amari Rodgers in the second round instead of Josh Myers, that they were debating between the two. And then they tried everything they could to get up in the third round to take Amari. They finally did. They took him. It was a complete disaster. And they left both Nico Collins and Amon-Ra St. Brown on the board. One other notable one, if they wanted to go interior offensive line there, Quinn Miners, offensive guard, obviously came from in-state. He was picked at pick 98. Again, Amari at pick 85. The verdict here, they needed the slot wide receiver. They could have stayed at 92. They could have gone with Amon-Ra St. Brown, who more fit their profile than Amari Rodgers did and would have clearly been the better slot wide receiver. So I'm going to say stay at 92, keep your extra fourth round pick at 135, and pick up Amon-Ra St. Brown in that scenario. Pick 142, Royce Newman at an 8.69 relative athletic score. Next five picks, Tyree Gillespie, Joshua Kandoa, Luke Farrell, Jamian Sherwood, nice linebacker for the Jets. He transitioned from safety to linebacker. Then Brevin Jordan, tight end for the Texans, had a solid career. Next five offensive linemen, Larry Borum, offensive tackle for the Bears. Jalen Moore for the 49ers, who just signed that new deal with... No, it wasn't the Titans. I'd have to go back and look who he just signed with. That's going to bother me. Brendan James, offensive tackle for the Chargers. Tommy Doyle, offensive tackle for the Bills. And Trey Hill, center for the Bengals. Those were the next offensive line picks. Now I have to look up Jalen Moore, just signed with the Chiefs. All right, yeah, Chiefs left tackle. That's right. So in hindsight, you could argue like Jalen Moore here, but Jalen Moore's barely played. Like, this is a little bit of a flyer contract signing from San Francisco. Clearly better than Royce Newman at this point. No question about it. I think you can make the argument here based off of the high-end athleticism that Newman had and their prototype and what they usually like here at the position. I think you can actually make an argument for Royce Newman. I'm not saying it worked out. I'm not saying it's perfect, but I think if you look at what was there, what was available, you can understand why they would have liked Royce Newman. And again, I'm not just trying to take the best player in hindsight. That's not fair. I think if you're using their own criteria, Royce Newman was a fine selection in this scenario. They needed interior offensive linemen still. He had tackle guard versatility, high-end athlete, started the whole first year for Green Bay in 2021. Like, there's worse things that could have happened here. So while this was a bust of a pick and Royce Newman's career in Green Bay was terrible, I think if you actually look at what was available and why they selected him, you can very clearly understand it. So I'm going to stick with Royce Newman here in the fourth round. In the fifth round, they took TJ Slayton and Tremar John Charles at pick 173 and 178, respectively. Players who went in this range: Ernest Brown, defensive end for the Rams; Jason Pinnock, safety for the Jets; KJ Britt, linebacker for the Bucks; Cameron McGrone, linebacker for the Patriots; Tremar John Charles; Simi Fehoko, wide receiver for the Cowboys; Talanoa Hufanga, the really good safety for the Niners; Cornell Powell, wide receiver for the Chiefs; Adetokunbo Ogundeji. I did not realize there was an Adetokunbo in this draft, but there was. Defensive end for the Falcons. And then Avery Williams, corner slash special team slash running back for the Falcons. The next five defensive linemen after Slayton: Marlon Tuipulotu, Quentin Bohanna, Roy Lopez, Jalen Twyman, and Jonathan Marshall. Next five corners after SJC: Avery Williams, Brandon Echols, Rodarius Williams, Rashad Wild Goose, and Tay Gowan. My verdict here is TJ Slayton was more than accepted. And that's a good pick. I know he didn't re-sign with Green Bay, but in the fifth round, that's a good pick. They needed defensive line help. They get defensive line help. That this was the right decision. And then Tremar John Charles, I think Avery Williams at the time, and even in Avery Williams has had a very forgettable career. Avery Williams was the higher end athlete, had kick return ability, was a big time special teams player, still is a big time special teams player, and had the ability to play both corner and running back. So I think that would have been, if you want versatility, higher athleticism, special teams prowess, some ability to play corner, like that would have been Avery Williams. And so I would have said here, fifth round, TJ Slayton and Avery Williams. Sixth round, they take Cole Van Lannen at 214, Isaiah McDuffie at 220. Here's the big one. We're not going to get, as these late ones go on, we're not going to get into them in as much detail. Trey Smith, the superstar guard for the Chiefs, went at pick 226. And I'll say this one more time, just using Green Bay's criteria, Trey Smith was a freak. 9.89 relative athletic score. 6'5", 325. Similar to you know, what they just signed in Aaron Banks. This should have been Green Bay written all over it. They never take the Wisconsin guy, and they took one in Cole Van Lannen here, right? Cole Van Lannen, 8.39 relative athletic score at pick 214, 226 Trey Smith with a 9.89 relative athletic score. That's the freak athlete. That's what Green Bay does. They take this guy. If you even narrow it based on Green Bay's criteria, right? Trey Smith is the more obvious selection there. Cole Van Lannen, a little bit more versatility. That's maybe one of the reasons they went with him in that situation. But my goodness, just take the higher end athlete. That's your thing. That's what you do. And Trey Smith is right there at pick, 226. Isaiah McDuffie, fine at 220. There's not a really better option out there. I can clearly understand that pick. And guess what? He's still on the team anyway. So sixth round, our final verdict here is Trey Smith and Isaiah McDuffie. Seventh round, Kylan Hill was taken at pick 256. There were only three picks left, Jamar Jefferson, Dax Milne, and Grant Stewart. We're just going to keep Kylan Hill. A lot of people, myself included, were very excited about Kylan Hill at the time. It didn't work out, but you can understand why Green Bay went in that direction. So what does that leave you with in totality? Just using kind of, again, Green Bay's own concepts for them. They just would have maybe scouted it a little bit different. First round, either Tyson Campbell or Eric Stokes. I think either of those would have been fine conclusions to get to based off of needs and what their criteria was at the time. Second round, Creed Humphrey. Third round, I'm going to say Amon-Ra St. Brown. You could say Nico Collins. You could even say Quinn Miners, but I'm going to say Amon-Ra St. Brown here. They needed a slot guy. He would have given them that slot guy. They already had his brother on the team. Maybe that's why they stayed away from it. I don't know, but it just would have made all the sense in the world. Fourth round, we're sticking with Royce Newman, as painful as that was. Fifth round, we're sticking with TJ Slayton and then going Avery Williams instead of Shamarjon Charles. Sixth round, we're going with Trey Smith instead of Cole Van Lannen and Isaiah McDuffie at the other sixth round spot, which they took. And then we're sticking with Kylan Hill in round seven. So that is what we're looking at. Now, here's the thing. I want to be very clear here. It is unrealistic to sit here with the benefit of hindsight and say they should have gotten all this right. Right? A draft of Tyson Campbell, Creed Humphrey, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Nico Collins, you know, TJ Slayton, Trey Smith, Isaiah McDuffie. That would have fed some families. I would have liked Green Bay's chances to maybe have another Super Bowl ring if that's the draft that they would have went with, right? It's not that easy. And again, you can do this with every team from beginning of time through now to eternity. There's going to be better picks that are out there. Here's the thing. By using their own criteria, by using their own things that they usually draft with, you can't miss on all of those. You just needed just one would have been fine, right? They would have taken Creed Humphrey instead of Josh Myers. Everything else would have probably been okay. Like, again, I'm not expecting them to nail everything, but that is the most obvious one. And that one they should have gone with very clearly, right? A massive miss. Amari Rodgers over Amon-Ra St. Brown and Nico Collins, a massive miss. No two ways around it. Two clearly now better wide receivers that were out there. Now, a lot of people, myself included, liked the Amari pick at the time, but just using their own criteria, they would have gone with Nico or Amon-Ra ahead of Amari Rodgers almost every single time. And then Trey Smith over Cole Van Lannen. Trey Smith, the freakier athlete. I get there were some questions about his weight and some of the stuff that he did in college, just from like his effort on the field. That's the freaky high-end athlete guy. And Cole Van Lannen wasn't a bad athlete, but Trey Smith was a freak athlete. So if they just could have either gotten Trey Smith over Cole Van Lannen, Creed Humphrey over Josh Myers, and either Amon-Ra St. Brown or Nico Collins over Amari Rodgers, just one would have been more than worth it. I've seen people say, well, the 2021 draft was just bad in general. It was a bad draft, but Green Bay had opportunities. They could have crushed this draft out of the ballpark. It could have completely changed their franchise. And why I'm discussing this is not just because McDuffie is the only one left. It's because who did Green Bay sign recently? They signed Aaron Banks from this draft class. And then they obviously went out and signed Nate Hobbs as well, a corner. What were their first two draft picks in their 2021 draft? Interior offensive line, Josh Myers, corner, Eric Stokes. Those are their top two. They missed, so now they need to go out and spend big money to fill those positions via free agency. By the way, Aaron Banks, four-year, $77 million deal. Creed Humphrey, when he signed his extension, four-year, $76 million. Center, a little bit maybe different. You had the all-pro center that actually would have made slightly less money if they would have been able to just pick him over Josh Myers. Wouldn't have had to go out and sign an Aaron Banks. And in the meantime, you would have had an all-pro center over these last few years as well. A massive miss. Listen, Goody does a lot of really good stuff. This stuff happens in the draft. You learn from it. You get better. You learn from your mistakes. And we'll see if Goody can kind of move forward. But make no mistake, 2021 was an epic fail of a draft. And if you want to be a Super Bowl team, especially as mostly a draft and develop franchise, you can't have drafts like this. Can't have drafts like this. There were opportunities out there. Green Bay missed on them. And not just, again, with benefit of hindsight, but utilizing what we know about what type of players that they like. They had a funnel of players that was available to them that should have included Nico Collins, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Quinn Miners, Creed Humphrey, and Trey Smith. And they just either overthought it or misevaluated it. And it is a huge mistake, a huge missed opportunity. Needs to be better moving forward. Like I said, hopefully they move on, learn their lessons. But a huge reason why Green Bay is good and maybe not great is because they've missed on some of these opportunities. It's going to be ultra important that they hit on some of these moving forward, starting with a 2025 NFL draft that just so happens to be in Green Bay, Wisconsin. That's going to do it for me today. Thank you so much, as always, for joining me. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Mo State and Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, Step Keat, Dylan Pat Scott, Bobby Santoro, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Razul Douglas Time, and Jay Conner. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.